This is No More Silence, a podcast dedicated to bringing an end to youth violence in Toledo. This is a youth-led podcast bringing high school and university students together with community leaders and experts to learn about the complex causes of youth violence. Experts will discuss initiatives in the city, trauma-informed communities, opportunity networks, the courage required of nonviolence, and much more. The podcast will bring to light youth experiences that stay hidden to the general community. Adults and youth will also share poetry considering the impact of adultism, which is an adult bias against youth. No More Silence is the result of the RAM Empowerment Project and Fearless Writers, two local programs fostering youth-led activism and knowledge creation. Welcome to episode 7 of No More Silence, Trauma and Healing, part 1. The questions posed to adult experts in this episode were designed by high school students as part of their work in two youth-led advocacy programs, Fearless Writers and RAM Empowerment Project. Today we will be talking with Celia Williamson, who is the director of the Human Trafficking and Social Justice Institute at the University of Toledo and the host of the podcast Emancipation Nation. Dr. Williamson has a new book out about interpersonal violence titled The Survivor's Journey, written in 2022. Dr. Williamson is considered one of the top most influential living social workers of our time and is a global expert on human trafficking and leads the over two-decade established annual Human Trafficking and Social Justice Conference, bringing survivors, professionals, academics, and students together to learn about social justice advocacy. Celia grew up in Toledo and generously dedicated her time to talking with students, parents, and teachers at Rogers High School about her understanding of trauma and healing based on over 25 years of research and advocacy. My name is Heather Cleary, and I'm a faculty member of the social work program at the University of Toledo and one of the founding members of Fearless Writers and an adult member of RAM Empowerment Project.
Okay, allow me to introduce myself. I'm Dr. Celia Williamson from the University of Toledo. And to tell you a little bit about myself and how I really gained experience in trauma is that I was raised in a low-income, high-crime area in the community many years ago. And I had no idea that anything was wrong. I thought this was all normal, but people in my neighborhood, they went to the children's home. Their parents used drugs or were alcoholics. And there was a lot of violence and struggle in the neighborhood and extreme poverty. But there was also a lot of love and caring. And so I learned that helping people was the most important thing you could do. And some families, you know, gaining as much wealth as you can, I guess, was the most important thing. But in my community, it was how can you be the best human you can be and how can you help other people? So I saw a lot of struggle, a lot of violence, a lot of crime, a lot of victimization. And then later learned that trauma comes along with that victimization. And so I learned a lot about interpersonal trauma, not only in my community and in my family, but academically through research and through evaluation. So I became a social worker, and I'm very proud of that. And I became a researcher, an evaluator, and still learning about trauma and about how I can help communities. Because in my family, it doesn't matter how big you get, like service, that is the rent you pay for being successful. So you never forget where you come from. So trauma can be so complex. And I think that a lot of people are now tuned in to trauma in terms of they're learning trauma-informed care, like social workers and police officers and healthcare people. They're saying, oh, we need to be trauma-informed. And even school teachers and administrators. But in my world, that's just the beginning. Like, that's just the foundation, right? That's so small in my world. So important, but so small, because trauma-informed care really means I am now informed that you have trauma. That's great. But if I go to the emergency room and your knee is bleeding and I stand in front of you and say, I am informed that you have trauma to your knee, I haven't helped you yet. I'm just informed that you have trauma. I think that's where we are as a society. But we have to actually heal the trauma, which means we first have to recognize the trauma. So when you see young people that are acting like they want to fight, because there's fight, there's flight, there's freeze, and there's fawn, right? So if I'm fighting like, no, I'm not doing that. No, I'm not going over there. Leave me alone. I might be in a fight mode. That doesn't mean that I'm a hostile person. It doesn't mean that something is wrong with me. It might mean that I have experienced so much trauma in my life that I want to fight everyone. You cannot get close to me. You cannot get in here. Most people close themselves off not because they don't want to deal with you. It's because they're trying to protect whatever little wonderfulness they have left, right? So they will fight you. Or they freeze and they don't do what they said they would do. And so professionals might be saying, well, why don't you're lazy. Why don't you do what I told you? And I might be frozen because that's my trauma response when I get afraid. Or I might fawn, which means I'm going to come and tell my teachers, or I'm going to tell people, oh, yes, I love that idea. Oh, I would love to be involved. Oh, yes, I want to do that. And I don't do that because I never really wanted to do that. But my trauma response is to fawn, see, or fly away and never show up where I said I was going to be because my trauma response is flight. So fight, flight, freeze, fawn. Instead of you attacking my character and saying something's wrong with me because I didn't do this and that. And by the way, we like to attack people's character in a very negative ways and assign that to who they are. But really, it could be a trauma response, right? And according to the Center for Disease Control, there are 80 plus symptoms and triggers of trauma. And they're all individualized to people's experience. And by the way, if someone is sexually abused, they experience trauma. But there is no scale on which you could say, well, your trauma is really significant. That's a valid trauma. And yours, because your uncle kissed you once inappropriately, oh, well, that's not so bad. Trauma is in the eye of the beholder. So it's not to you to say whether my trauma is severe enough or minimal. It is in the eye of the beholder. When people experience trauma, and they could experience chronic trauma, meaning the same trauma over and over and over. Maybe they're in a teen dating violence situation. They're getting beaten up every week, or their mother has been beaten up every week. So there's chronic trauma. Or there's complex trauma, where different types of trauma. You know, maybe I got beaten by my father, and then I got rejected by my mother. And then, so different types of trauma, because violence to the psyche doesn't always mean physical violence. There's emotional violence too, which is just as violent. You can be so violent verbally that you can cause trauma to someone else. So when people experience complex trauma on top of chronic trauma and we don't attend to it, then that's our fault. That's not their fault. And when they go to like a criminal justice system, and that criminal justice system says, well, someone abused you, I'm going to give you justice. And not many people have that. They don't get that opportunity. But even if they did, and someone went to jail because they violated you, that system will tell you to, you know, now you have closure. So put that away, shove it down, put it on the shelf. It's done, you got closure. Well, that is the most wrong-headed, unhealthy thing to do. Because you can't stuff your trauma down. It's going to come back up in all kinds of negative ways. In school, in your home, right? Or you go to the social service system and we go, well, let us help you get a house and some food and clothes. And by the way, you're a survivor of this trauma. And you go home and you're like, wow, man, I'm a survivor. Like you feel good. But then you go home and sit on your couch and you're like, wait a minute, I'm still depressed. I still feel worthless. And if you ask me how you doing and I say I'm surviving, what is that? That's not living. Right? Or then you go to the mental health system and you say, I need counseling. You go to counseling and it doesn't really work because you didn't know that you needed trauma treatment counseling. That's a specific certification of somebody who can treat someone with trauma. Otherwise, counseling doesn't work for you. So you go to 6-8 sessions, you're like, I still feel rotten because you didn't go to the specialist. You didn't go to the trauma treatment specialist. So then you say to yourself, well, wow, I went to the mental health system, I went to the social service system, I went to the criminal justice system, and I am still broken. I still feel worthless. And you say to yourself, wow, it can't be that all these systems have failed me. It's got to be me. I am uniquely broken. But you were right. All of these systems failed you. It is them. It is not you. So the unique challenges of young people is sometimes they get angry because young people have a vision that some of us older people lost long ago. You can see the BS. And the adults are trying to convince you that these systems are helping. And you can see that they're not. So your challenge, you get very angry sometimes because you know that you are supposed to be the queen and the king, that the adults are supposed to love you and put the crown on your heads and treat you like you are valuable because you are. And when they don't, they often try to justify themselves why they don't. So I would say trust your gut. Many times you can see truth when the adults can't see it anymore. I do want to say that when someone has been vulnerable to abuse, whether it's child abuse, neglect, sexual assault, any of those things, that if it's not treated or discussed or talked about, that young person is then even more vulnerable to something else. And so it's so important that parents or adult mentors talk to young people, for real, like not just how are you doing in school, but for real topics, scary topics. And for parents out there, it's so important that, you know, people say, you know, I'm not my child's friend. And I think that's wise. But also, I think it's a double-edged sword because I'm not my child's friend means that I just bark out the orders and you go do stuff. Now, if you parent that way, just know that your child is facing all these risks every single day. You just don't know about it. So the thing is today you have to be a hybrid parent. You have to be authority enough to be able to guide this young person, but you have to be friend enough to be able to hear the scary conversations. And I know with my daughter, when she was a teenager, some of the conversations she shared with me had my little inner ear burning, like I wanted to scream inside. But I kept my little face together and I just listened, because if I made any reaction, she's like, see, that's why I don't tell you anything. So nope, tell me. Because I have to learn enough. I have to be your trusted confidant. I don't want you to go ask another 14-year-old little girl and two little 14-year-old brains trying to figure out this adult problem. So I have to be friend enough to hear the information, to be trusted confidant, but I have to be parent enough to be able to guide that young person. And that's the type of parent we need today. As, you know, my friend said, it's not the same. We're not, it's a different world for young people.
I'm Rose Metz, and I'm the parent of Cheyenne Metz, a student here at Rogers High School. Just starting with the fact that the mind has the ability to hold on to things, and for the most part, you'll remember the bad before you remember the good. And you mentioned chronic trauma. Chronic trauma, when you're treating that, I guess the question is, what is the complexities of it? What's the outcome? I'm glad you mentioned that there is a special counseling that treats chronic trauma or complex traumas. What are the outcomes, just knowing that the mind has the ability to hold on to things for life?
Yeah, I think one of the specific traumas that has a lot of good research on is called EMDR. It's eye movement reprocessing sensitization. I think I said that correctly, but EMDR. And the outcome is really not to erase the trauma from your mind, but like I mentioned, there are 80 plus symptoms and triggers, from smells, from parts of the city that you might be in, the colors, all kinds of things that might have reminded you of the abuse, and maybe not even consciously. Like, you're not saying, oh my God, that smell of that cologne is triggering me. It's just the smell, and subconsciously you're reacting to it. Now you're agitated and you don't understand why. So with trauma treatment, it helps you uncover the trauma, to understand the triggers and the symptoms, and then to gain power over those, to empower yourself to be able to handle it, not to forget it, because, you know, you don't forget, but to be able to handle it and to be able to go on with life and not be vulnerable to this chronic issue or complex issue that can be debilitating. It can be debilitating, just like someone in a wheelchair or whatever that has to take special accommodations. Trauma can debilitate people, where they will avoid situations, they will avoid their goals and dreams in life, they will, you know, sabotage things that they really wanted to do. So it, having trauma treatment, can, some of the people that have had it, it has really changed their lives for the better. And a lot of times when we come in and we say, hey, you know, parents will say, something's going on with my kid, that could be the moment where they get help. And sometimes parents have gone through tremendous trauma that they say, okay, I can't attend to this right now. I have kids. I have to make sure I take care of my kids, which is a very noble thing to do. But being able to take the time to take care of ourselves as parents is so critically important, because not only for our own mental health, but it teaches our kids the most valuable lesson ever. It teaches them that they are valuable, because if they see their mom taking care of herself, that gives them permission to take care of themselves. And moms, you know, what we do is we say, I'm gonna sacrifice everything for my kid. I'm gonna give my kid everything because I love them and I wanna make sure. And often they learn, well, my mom don't care about herself. She gave it all to me, so why should I care about myself? But if they see a mom actually taking care of herself, going to her therapy, maybe, you know, taking care of herself, that teaches them I can take care of myself also.
My name is Imani Massengill. I go to Rogers High School, and I am a sophomore. My question for you would be, what is your take on the type of parents that say, do as I say, not as I do?
Well, quite frankly, that's an excellent question, and I think it's a cop-out because, of course, kids are smarter than that. So, for instance, I'm just going to say, for example, if you're sitting here smoking a cigarette telling your child never to smoke, kids are smarter than that. They don't listen to what you say. They listen to what you do. So it's important, like I said before, if you want your child to take care of themselves, take care of yourself. If you want your child to be safe and be thinking safety, whenever, then you gotta be thinking safety. If you want your child to be thinking about some of the evils in society, you gotta start that conversation. You gotta make that a conversation in your house. So if you are dating healthy partners, then it's at least a higher probability that your child will look for healthy partners. But if you have a toxic or violent partner, what are you teaching? So you have to teach by, yes, saying, but you also have to do. You have to be the type of person that you want your child to be. And then, of course, it's their choice. You know, you can't control that, but you have to emulate that. You have to be a role model. You have to be a mentor. You have to be a guide. You have to be the type of person that is really worthy of the title mother and father and to be loved.
We would like to thank WGTE and the producer of Voices Around Us, Chris Pfeiffer, for the opportunity to share our stories. Thank you to Celia Williamson, Wendy Eastler, Deshaun Head, Daphne Herford, Michael Mims from Save Our Community, and Tina DeBord for their support of this event. Please join us for Episode 8, What is Nonviolence Part 2, featuring Shitrajan Greer Travis, a doctoral student from the University of Toledo. I am Heather Cleary, and you have been listening to No More Silence. Feel free to comment and follow us at wgte.org/nomoresilence or wherever you stream your podcasts.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.